you remember foot and mouth? What about bird flu? Many of us will remember these diseases, which at several times in our recent history have had terrible pandemic outbreaks in farm animals like cows, sheep, and poultry. But while these big-name diseases might have received a lot of attention over the years, there are a whole host of other endemic livestock diseases, those are diseases which are constantly present, which have been crying out for the attention of researchers. That's where today's guest, Professor Abigail Woods, comes in. Abigail is a historian of science, technology, and medicine, and head of College of Arts at the University of Lincoln. Her interdisciplinary research project, called FIELD, seeks to solve the problems caused by some of these endemic livestock diseases by studying the past, present, and future of these diseases and their effects on the agricultural industry and beyond. I'm Matt Young, and welcome to Spotlights. Hi, Abigail. Welcome to the Spotlights podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Matt.
Before we dig into all the questions we've got for you today, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself? Tell us who you are and what it is you do.
I'm PVC and head of the College of Arts. I'm also principal investigator on a big interdisciplinary research project that we're going to talk about today, which is called FIELD, or Farm Level Interdisciplinary Approaches to Endemic Livestock Disease.
So Abigail, you've got quite an interesting career path. You started off as a veterinary surgeon, and you've now ended up as a researcher focusing on agriculture and animal health. So why don't you tell us a bit about this career trajectory of yours and how you ended up where you are today?
Well, it was all quite accidental, really, because my first degree was a veterinary degree, which took 6 years. In the course of that 6 years, I had the opportunity to spend a year doing something completely different. And again, accidentally, I ended up in the history of science, technology, and medicine, which I really enjoyed. But I didn't think anything more of that until a few years later when I was in veterinary practice and not quite sure about where I wanted to go. So I thought I'd do a master's degree, go back to university, and develop my understanding of the history of science, technology, and medicine a little bit more. Again, I really enjoyed that, and I was lucky enough to get PhD funding. I was then lucky enough to get funding for a postdoc, and then lucky enough to get a lectureship in the history of medicine. And so that became an entirely new career.
Took some turns that you probably weren't expecting, I guess, when you started out in your university career.
Absolutely not. It's all been quite a surprise, really.
Well, we're glad you are where you are right now. That leads us to your current exciting, very big research project, which is all to do with the history of agriculture and animal health, all that kind of stuff. So give us an introduction to FIELD. What is it? What does FIELD stand for? And what is the project all about?
It's a big project. There's 13 of us spread across 6 universities. There's actually 6 of us as principal investigators, and then we have some PhD students and postdocs. And we straddle history of medicine, social sciences, and economic modelling. So we go right from the very qualitative historical to the quantitative and the contemporary. So it's a fair span.
Before you go on, that last term you used there, that's an interesting one that I don't think many people will have heard before. So it seems like the project is really broad and expansive and incorporates all these wonderful experts from various different fields, and it's hugely interdisciplinary. But that what was that last phrase? What does that exactly mean?
Economic modelling. So essentially modelling in the same way that everyone sees modelling going on in COVID. Epidemiologists modelling, predicting what might happen with the epidemic, going on the basis of what data is available now. So we have epidemiologists doing this modelling of the diseases that we're studying, but we also have economists who adopt a similarly quantitative approach, and they form a sort of disciplinary cluster working together on the basis of modelling and predicting what might happen next. So there's 13 of us. The project is FIELD, which stands for Farm Level Interdisciplinary Approaches to Endemic Livestock Disease. We came together realising that endemic diseases, that's the sorts of diseases that are always with us. they're grumbling along always in the background, and they don't tend to get the same sorts of attention that epidemics do, because epidemics appear suddenly, they're shocking, they demand action. Endemic disease is there all the time, but because it's there all the time, it actually exerts a greater cumulative toll, but it also attracts less attention in terms of research and investigation and control. So we thought there was a need to focus on endemic disease rather than more sexy epidemic diseases. But the fact that these diseases are with us all the time means there's a problem. If we were good at controlling them, they wouldn't be with us all the time. So clearly there's more to be done in that space. How do we better control these diseases that we have to live with? We decided to choose two diseases in particular as exemplars of the type of problem we're talking about. One of them is lameness, which affects cattle and sheep, and is really, really prevalent. It's reckoned that about a quarter of dairy cattle are lame at any one time. And because they're lame, it's painful for them. They produce less milk. It's also shown to have a knock-on effect in their fertility. It's a really, really problematic disease. Similarly with the sheep, it tends to be a flock-level problem. It doesn't just affect one sheep, it affects a lot of sheep. It requires a lot of attention, it costs a lot of money, it's not great for the sheep either. And lameness is a problem which is partly bacterial, but it's also very much about environments. It's also very much about the ways in which animals are kept. So that was one decision. Our other disease is something which nobody, I think, outside the realms of farming has really heard of. It's called BVD, which stands for bovine viral diarrhea. In fact, it isn't just about diarrhea and it doesn't just affect cows. So it's a strange term, really. But again, it's a disease that's present in the population, and it's the sort of thing that spreads through the movement and sale of cattle. And if you've got it in your herd, it's a bit like AIDS in the fact that it can manifest in lots of other types of illnesses, which are really an indication of an underlying problem with the immune system. But again, it can be very costly. It can manifest in poor fertility, in poor growth, in poor milk production. It's not great for the cow welfare either. So we have two problems here, which are always present in cattle and sheep populations. They're problems of health, they're problems of welfare, and they're problems of production and profit.
So if your project is focusing on these two particular problems that are, as you say, these are endemic diseases that really plague farmers and livestock, what is the difference in how these problems have been tackled in the past? Because obviously you said you've got a historical perspective on this. So how have these problems been dealt with differently in the past compared to the epidemic diseases? And I think examples of epidemic agricultural diseases that people will be most familiar with would be the foot and mouth outbreaks, bird flu, those kind of things, and correct me if I'm wrong. But those, I think, have been very prominent in the news when they appear, and everyone is very familiar with the fairly shocking images of large culling of herds and flocks of animals. But as you rightly said, no one, especially me as someone who's never been involved in the world of farming and agriculture, I've never really heard of those diseases, and I wasn't even aware that they were present in the background. So how have they been dealt with previously and historically?
Because they're endemic diseases and because they're there all the time and they lack that shock factor, they've tended to fall outside of the fairly small cluster of diseases that have been seen as a government responsibility to control. It's also because they don't have any direct effect on human health. So the sorts of diseases that government has taken it upon itself to control for really the last 150 years are the sorts of things which are epidemic. They might be foreign and suddenly invade. They might be very bad for human health. So avian influenza as a disease that can also affect humans. Foot and mouth disease, highly contagious. Tuberculosis, if we look at the culling of badgers for tuberculosis, that's another of these problems that fall under government control. Endemic diseases that only affect livestock and not humans as well have typically been left as private problems. They're left for the farmer to decide how they want to control, and they're the ones that have to spend the money on controlling it. So it's been very much left to the individual, and so you see a very wide range of responses. Because it's been very much left to the individual, it's also not necessarily attracted as much research funds. The level of response has been quite variable. What these diseases have typically attracted, though, and what makes field different, is they attract scientific research, but not really research from the social sciences and humanities. And that really goes for all diseases in general. They're seen as health problems, and therefore it's health scientists who are needed to solve them, which, of course, health scientists are needed. But typically, certainly in the field of animal health, those scientists have tended to focus very narrowly on the disease as a scientific problem, on the nature of the germs that cause the diseases, on how those germs spread, on how they impact on animal bodies, and how we need to remove those impacts, which of course is important. But as I always say, ultimately, it's not, germs don't just spread disease on their own. It's humans who decide to move cows around that allows the germs to spread. So humans have a role here. They have ultimate responsibility for the health of their animals. And so human behaviour is absolutely crucial in understanding how diseases spread and affect animals. And human behaviour, human decision-making around animal health is not just a product of what's happening now. The way people think about their animals, the way they interact with them, the way in which they're attuned to certain manifestations of disease, the way in which they prioritise how to act on those diseases, a lot of that comes about because of what's happened previously. You might be attuned to certain diseases because you've experienced them before. Equally, you might be entirely familiar with animals that manifest a disease to the extent that it's normal to you, so you don't see it anymore. So it's important to take on board people's personal memories, a longer history of how our understandings of diseases have evolved, and use that to try and understand how people are reacting to disease today. And then we can bring in all the studies of the germs and the science to round out that understanding of what the diseases are doing to animal bodies. So this is what field does. We stitch together the past and the present and the potential future from the perspectives of history, social science, and that economic modelling.
I think that's a really interesting approach that many people might not have heard of before when it comes to looking into communicable diseases, whether it be in humans or animals. And it is something that I think is actually very pertinent and relevant to the world we're currently living in today. So as people will probably kind of hear from the type of quality of this recording, that this is an interview that's been done remotely, and it's been recorded in the time of the coronavirus pandemic. And I think something that all of our listeners can relate to is that during the course of this pandemic, we've all become more aware of the human role in disease, and not just the mechanism of how a disease in itself works. By all means, we've learned a bit more about those kind of things in general, but it has become a lot more important to understand how diseases are understood and dealt with and move. And you can just look at the way different countries have handled these things. So it's very obvious to me how this understanding, this human understanding of these livestock diseases is going to be extremely important to solving some of these issues and to shedding light on some of these problems. So the field project is still in its early stages, from my understanding. So what kind of work is carried out on a project like field, where you're looking into more of the social science aspects of this livestock health issue?
Like all interdisciplinary projects, I think it is a bit experimental. We are used to working in our disciplinary silos where we share methods, we have concepts, and we sort of understand what we're doing together. When you're working in different disciplines and trying to come together, it takes a certain amount of time just to work out what you're saying to each other. You might have the same terms but mean different things by them. You might have such radically different approaches, you can't quite see how you can possibly speak to each other. So we have our quantitative modellers, and how they make sense of the world is by simplifying it. Whereas in the social sciences and history, you tend to make sense of the world by complexifying it. Things aren't that simple. Things didn't have to turn out that way. You need to consider these factors in order to explain things. So how on earth can we even begin to hold a conversation when some of us are trying to simplify and some of us are trying to complexify? These are the sorts of things that we've had to work through in coming together as a research group. And to be fair, even before we came together in field, we were having these conversations, and I think it was important for us to know that we would be able to work together in order to go out convincingly, make a bid for funding, and then actually produce the work that we promised. That way of working isn't a given. You have to find your collaborators with care, people who really do want to do this, do see the meaning in it, and are really committed to putting in that extra spade work that is required to speak and work across disciplines.
That's a very important point to make in this, because these days, people who are not really involved in the world of research might not realize just how interdisciplinary a lot of research is and the types of challenges that come with that. So to you as a researcher, why is it important for you to reach across to other specialisms and work with each other on one specific project and one specific subject?
I think it comes to the issue I was just talking about, which is that science alone cannot solve the world's problems. Of course, we need it, but in the case of disease, science has been working on these problems for a very long time. We haven't got solutions yet. These endemic diseases are still there. We're still living with them. So I think we have to put in the understandings of people, and we have to put in the understandings of how we got to where we are now, and that will help us to understand perhaps where we might be going. So only by bringing these perspectives together to tackle this problem can we begin to really understand it holistically and make sense of it and think about then, well, what sorts of actions might be effective. Technological fixes alone for disease rarely work. Why should we're having this conversation now around COVID? What about people who don't want to be vaccinated? It's all very good having a perfect vaccine. What if nobody wants it? What if it costs too much? What if it's too difficult to access? What if the last time I vaccinated my cow died? So all of that bundle of stuff requires social science historical input to understand. And if we can think about that in tandem with the science of disease control, then we might get to a situation where we can do something better about it.
Yeah, it truly does sound like a wonderful, confusing web of problems and solutions there. And I think nowadays, the more researchers I speak to, the more obvious it is just how complex all of these problems are and how many of these problems we're trying to solve as researchers do require input from so many different fields of expertise and so many different areas of knowledge. Because as you rightly said, these problems are down to human beings, the way we live, the way we behave, the way we work, the way we create the structures around us, like the economy, like the law, and that all has an impact on these problems. So another aspect of who to involve in this work is, I guess, the people who aren't researchers, the people who are public. And I know this is something that you think is quite important in your work and in research, and you yourself try and involve the public in what you do. So I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about how you take the approach of engaging non-researchers in your work and what the point of all that is for you.
Well, we do quite a few things. What we found is that history is a really great hook for getting people to talk. So if we want to find out public perceptions of lame sheep, and a lot of people are familiar with lame sheep, when they walk into the countryside, they'll have noticed them. If we want to know what people have understood about lame sheep, what they might have done when they saw them, a great way is to take them some historical pictures or an old hoof knife that's used to cut the hooves of sheep and say, you know, what do you think this is? What do you think's going on here? And that can open up wider discussions, not just around the disease themselves, but also around farming and farming systems. And that can take us into some really controversial areas. There's a lot of debate around, is farming bad for the planet? Is it bad for animals? Is it better if we all become vegans? Should we just eat less meat but better meat? All of this stuff is really contentious. Some people feel really, really strongly about it. And it's quite hard just to get a general dialogue going without it degenerating, as it often does in social media, into a sort of tit-for-tat exchange. So we're aiming to have those wider conversations as part of our engagement with the public, not just to talk about the diseases that we happen to be studying. Because after all, these diseases are a product of our farming systems. So these things are linked. So we've done various things around taking historical photos to different groups of different publics, different settings to open up those conversations. What's really exciting that we're doing at the moment is that we got some additional funding to hire 3 artists in residence with the project. So we have a photographer, Michelle Allen, we have an artist, Shane Finnan, and a filmmaker, Mark Jones, who are shadowing us, working with us, interrogating us, bouncing off each other as well, and creating these artworks, which will then form the basis for our series of public engagement activities over the next 12 months. And we hope to bring them to campus, or possibly to Rise Home, and to have some events at Lincoln that will just help us to have those non-judgmental, inclusive conversations about what should the future of farming and our relationship with livestock look like.
And I really love that you've even extended the concept of interdisciplinarity even into the arts and bringing them into your research in terms of how you communicate that work and how you involve the non-specialist audiences in that work. I think that's really exciting. And that's something that I think many people would be very interested to see how that develops and how that works. Because after all, the world of science and research can be so complicated, as you've alluded to. Even trying to speak from one specialist to another, there's barriers of language and understanding. And as soon as you take a step outside of the world of the university or whatever the institution is that carries out that research, those barriers become even greater for everyday people who are not involved in this world. So yeah, that's something that's really exciting to hear. And I'm personally very excited to see how all of that turns out. As someone who is an expert in history of medicine and is now working on a really complex human problem in the world of livestock and agriculture, a lot of people might think that that is such an interesting, unique niche area. How does somebody become interested in that? What is it for you that really draws you to this area and that makes you want to, you know, develop these amazing, complex projects to study these particular problems?
A long journey. It's sort of an intellectual journey, really. So I did my PhD on the history of foot and mouth disease, and I happened to be studying it at 20 years ago when the big foot and mouth disease epidemic occurred. So that immediately flung me into conversations with a whole raft of different people that a history PhD student would never end up speaking to around how the disease was managed now. And I was able to tell them it's being managed like this now because of what happened 130 years ago and at various intervals in between. So this made me realise that actually it is possible, and indeed it's almost a necessity, I think, that if you are, you can do good historical scholarship and also speak to present day agendas. And understanding different disciplinary perspectives on that problem is all part of understanding that those present day agendas. So that was a bit of a baptism of fire, that whole experience of working through that really dreadful epidemic. But I came out of it thinking, well, that was foot and mouth disease. Epidemic diseases are actually quite rare. So there are a lot of diseases, most of the diseases that we encounter most of the time are not epidemic diseases. And they aren't written about in history in any way near the same quantity as these epidemic diseases. So if we're really going to understand historic disease experiences, we need to get beyond epidemics. So my work evolved after that to look at less headline diseases, the sorts of things like infertility in cows or mastitis in cows or weird diseases like louping in an ill in sheep, a whole raft of things that no one's ever heard of because they're just not epidemics. And for a lot of that, I was working as a historian with other historians, but I was rounding out my understanding of those diseases and also realising that those are the diseases that are being dealt with by farmers. So again, if we want to get beyond the state in realising how animal diseases are managed, we have to study farmers, we have to think about practising vets. So really pushing out my understanding. And in the course of that work, I was meeting other people who had other interests, and again, not necessarily just historians. At various conferences along the way, I hooked up with a few social scientists. I was a visiting fellow at the Centre for Rural Economy in Newcastle University, which has really led the field in thinking about the rural economy and the place of animals and vets within it. So I was making lots of connections. How the field project came about was that I spotted an opportunity for funding for seed funding to work up a big interdisciplinary project. And it seemed like a great opportunity to draw in some of those people I'd had such productive conversations with along the way as I shared my own research to think about how we could do something together. So I didn't just wake up one day and say, let's create an interdisciplinary team. It was the product of a very long period of working and connecting and accidental conversations. And of course, you'll meet many people along the course of an academic career and never have anything to say to them ever again. But there are some people who just think, yes, you know, I really enjoyed speaking with you. I really think we could have do things productively together. So we drew those people together. They brought on board some people that they knew. And that was really how the field team came into being, a bunch of people who had a shared commitment to endemic livestock diseases, working at it from different disciplines, but had a shared commitment to working across disciplines.
I think that sounds like a really nice complementary story to the story you've just told us of the interconnectivity of all these human factors that are at play when we're trying to understand particular diseases. It seems like, you know, those human created webs and conversations and connections are just equally as important in terms of driving the passion and interest and the development of these kind of projects as well. So that's a really, really nice story to hear and to understand a bit how these projects come about, because I guess for many people who might just hear about the field project or any other similar research projects on the off, a question that a lot of them do ask, and myself included, is how on earth does somebody just get to this point one day where they say, yes, this project is going to happen? So yeah, thank you for giving us a bit of a better understanding into that part of your world. It's really fascinating to hear.
Yeah, it has been very serendipitous. And like I said, with my career, you know, I didn't have the plan that I was going to end up as a researcher in history and as head of College of Arts. It's just something which has evolved over time, and I've done the things that have made sense, and I've hooked up with the people who I felt I had the most in common with. And yes, these things eventually come out the pipe. So I know there are some people who work in very much more of a goal-oriented way and know exactly at the beginning where they want to end up, and they work single-mindedly to achieve it. My own path has been a little bit more meandering and accidental, but no less fulfilling, I think.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Abigail. And for people who want to find out a bit more about your field project and any other work you do, where could they go to find out more about this?
We have a website, fieldwt.com, and that has a lot of resources on it. It's got a timeline, which the historians on the project and the social scientists to a lesser extent work together on, with lots of lovely historical images of sheep and cattle and other things, which have come from the Museum of English Rural Life. And we've really enjoyed working with them as a partner on the field project. So you can see a timeline. We've got our outputs resources. We have a blog. There's more about the project. There's more about us as a team. So definitely have a look on the website.
We'll definitely make sure that's all included in the episode description. So if anyone's interested, please do look into that and have a look at the field website to find out more. And that just leaves me to say thank you for joining us today and for sharing your fascinating insights and your story from your part of the world of research.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Abigail.
Spotlights is produced by me, Matt Young, for the University of Lincoln in association with Siren Radio. To learn more, visit spotlights.blogs.lincoln.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.